We do welcome you today and appreciate the fact that you're here. Probably there are these moments in life where we can remember them. We won't forget them. And there are major ones that people talk about from time to time. But one that strikes me right now is the May 3rd tornadoes of 1999. 20 years ago, this is an incredible night that one major tornado, but multiple tornadoes just all over the place. And Oklahoma was just devastated in many, many ways. We live not too far south of Mulhall, and Mulhall kind of got lost in the traffic of everything that happened. But that little town was blown almost completely away. The water source was taken away. They had to drink bottled water for like 18 months. It was just a very, very tragic and difficult time. Where were you that night? Jack and Joyce had moved here just the fall before, and they thought that was the way springtime was in Oklahoma. And they were like, we made a big mistake. You know, we need to be living somewhere else. We're going back to Michigan. Other people have different kinds of remembrances of that. We remember traumatic moments. Remembering is important, and the power of remembering is really critical in our lives. Maybe you as a college student recently sat down and opened that final and thought, I don't know any of this. I don't remember anything about what's supposed to be, what's going down here at this particular point in time. But we remember patterns. We remember choices. And all of those things are very critical to us. The reason I share this is not too long ago in our Wednesday night class, we choose topics in our Wednesday night class, and the topic was remembering. And there was just so many things that came out of that discussion that stimulated my thought process that I decided I was going to create a sermon series to kind of take some things forward there. I was actually planning to do it a little bit later, but as I thought about it, there's actually two Sundays in the month of May that focus primarily on remembering. Next Sunday's Mother's Day and the last Sunday of Memorial Day. And so it made it for a real natural kind of topic. And this morning I'd like for us to think about the things that we might have forgotten in terms of what God has done for us. So easy for us to look at the negative things, the difficulties. If we can have that feeling like God's not taking care of me. And yet there's so many times and so many circumstances where that is exactly the opposite. We often are critical of the children of Israel. They're in slavery. They want to be taken out of slavery. God comes and does these 10 miraculous situations, the plagues. They are released. They are able to go through the Red Sea. And yet, as soon as they do, it says in Psalms chapter 106, verse 7, they forgot his many acts of kindness. Instead, they rebelled at him. At the Red Sea, immediately after. They start all this stuff about how much better it was back in Egypt. Why did we leave? Were there not enough graves out there? Back in Egypt, we had to die in the desert. They go on and on. And you know, when Moses goes up to get the Ten Commandments, they traded their glorious God for a statue of a grass-eating ox or a grass-eating bull in other places. They had left so quickly, and we're so critical of them. Now, every now and then, people say to me, I think you're being a little too judgmental when you are critical of the children of Israel. You know, we're all people and we all make mistakes. But I do want to make it absolutely clear that the Bible is critical of the children of Israel. It's not a judgment call. You know, it's real clear. If you want to go to 1 Corinthians chapter 10, and if we could just skip down to verse 14. And if I can just find it, back to verse 11, I'm sorry. These things happened to them as examples and were written down as warnings for us on whom the culmination of the ages has come. They're there for us to know and for us to remember and for us to see and to be warned by that. This morning, as we think about this topic, I'd like to look at the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 8. The book of Deuteronomy is Moses saying goodbye primarily and really encouraging and reminding and giving information that's going to be useful for the children of Israel. And if we start in verse 10 and read down through verse 14. There's my 14 I got confused about. Moses warns them, "When you have eaten and are satisfied, praise the Lord your God for the good land he's given you. Be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God, failing to observe his commands, his laws, his decrees that I'm giving you this day. Otherwise, when you eat and are satisfied, you will build fine houses and settle down. And when your herds and flocks grow large and your silver and gold increase and all you have is multiplied, then your heart will become proud and you will forget the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery." One of the things that Moses is so concerned about is how are you going to deal with prosperity when the good times come? When the situation is that you need to think back to those negative things that have been overcome so that you can have this very, very positive time and experience in your life. Moses knew that they would grow comfortable. We find ourselves being comfortable. And we'll look at just a few minutes about something else that kind of compares that. But our reaction sometimes is, well, if you knew my life, you wouldn't talk about being comfortable because there's so much that goes on in my life. And that's all dependent on how we look at things. But oftentimes we need some stimulation out of our comfort. There's an old story about traveling west and a young woman who had several children. She was falling asleep in the wagon because she was experiencing hypothermia, and they didn't know what to do to keep her awake. And finally, they, as the story goes, they threw her out of the wagon. And she chased the wagon because her family was in the wagon, and by so doing, they kept her alive. Well, we don't like to be uncomfortable. We don't like to be thrown out of the wagon. We don't like to have to chase. We don't like to have to be at our absolute maximum performance. But sometimes that's necessary for us to really move forward, to really do the things that we want and need to do. When we were talking in class, Ariel, who is Aaron Reeves' fiance, mentioned Maslow's Lowe's law hierarchy of needs, and it is kind of interesting when you look at the things that we remember. Let's go ahead and put that up if you would. It works from the bottom up. Many of you are familiar with this. Psychological needs, when we get those met, then we move on to safety, love and belonging, esteem, and self-actualization. And for a long time, researchers tried to say that these were very separate and that you worked through one and moved on to the next one, but that's no longer the position at all. These overlap in a lot of ways. And the reason that I put it up there is, you know, we understand this. If you're at a place where the things you do every day are necessary to fulfill your physiological needs, you know, if you have to produce the food, if you have to do the things that have to take place in your home situation, and you have that basic life, then you can understand what that stress is like. You move on to the next, the safety needs of being safe. And the reason that I put it up there is because probably most of us don't spend much time worrying about those first two. What a blessing that is. We are concerned maybe about whether the food we have is what we like or what we want, or maybe our food budget. Maybe our home, we'd like to make improvements, or we'd like to have a different home or a better home. But the basic needs of life in terms of our physiological needs and our safety needs, for most of us, those are taken care of. Not for everybody in our country. And so when we talk about, well, you know, I don't feel like people care about me. When we talk about our self-esteem, when we talk about the fact that my job doesn't bring out the best in me, when we do that, we need to remember that we're focusing at the top instead of the bottom. And whatever complaints we have about the upper three, We automatically are at a place where we say, thank you, Lord, that I'm not at the bottom, or that I'm not worried about safety issues, because those things are resolved primarily in our life so that we can begin to focus on the ones that are above. And that just is something that's useful and beneficial. It's so easy for us to forget. God knew that with the Jews, and so he set up things that would help them to remember, like Passover, the Feast of the Tabernacles, other things that would cause them to remember where they had been. And certainly, he does the same thing for us, not as much, but the symbol that we've shared together with this morning, 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 12. For whenever you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. Everybody here today has, whether you realize it or not, you've proclaimed the Lord's death. There are people in China who take communion very, very seriously because it's against the law for them to meet and to engage in that activity. And so you might visit a gathering of Christians, but at the point in time where communion happens is where you distinguish yourself between being an observer and being a participant. And at that point in time, the moment that you take communion is the moment when you could be charged with the crime of being a Christian. And so everybody is very, very serious about that particular action because it means so very much to them. Well, my time is going quickly. I'm going to have to hurry along here. The second thing that we would find in Deuteronomy, let's go back to verses 15 through 18. He led you through the vast and dreadful wilderness, that thirsty and waterless land and its venomous snakes and scorpions. He brought you water out of hard rock. He gave you manna to eat in the wilderness, something your ancestors had never known, to humble and test you so that in the end it might go well with you. You may say to yourself, my power and my strength of my hands have produced this wealth for me. But remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth and so confirms his covenant, which he swore to your ancestors as it is today. You get to that point in time where you say, well, I go to work. I'm the person that got the education. I'm the person who's exercised the discipline. I'm the person who gets along with other people at work. I made myself successful. And Moses is warning them against that impulse. He wants them to actively remember some things. God's blessings. What are some of the blessings, and this would be so much better if we could talk about them. What are some of the blessings that God is putting in your life right now? How about the miracles that have been in your life? And we're sometimes hesitant about miracles. But probably many of us, if not all of us, can recall those moments, those times when God intervened in such a dramatic way that we couldn't call it anything else but miraculous. And if you can't think of blessings, if you can't think of miracles, you can think of salvation. Because God, through his Son, purchased salvation for us. A tremendous thing that he's done. Romans chapter 5, verse 8. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this: while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. God gives us the ability to do the things that we do. And that knowledge comes from him. A few years ago, probably, I don't know how many, 15, something like that, there was a speech contest in San Antonio, and Terry took a group of kids down there to participate in the speech contest, and I went with her, and some other parents went with her, and there was time to do some sightseeing in San Antonio, and so we took the kids to the Alamo, and as a lot of kids are, they weren't very impressed once they actually got inside there, but there was a big IMAX presentation, and so after we looked toward the Alamo, we went and watched the IMAX presentation, and they're having a great time, just enjoying the movie, enjoying the story until you get real near the end. And in the last couple of minutes, they start looking down at Terry, like, are the Texans going to lose? They didn't know the story. They didn't know anything about it. Now, that wasn't a fault of their education because they hadn't had American history yet. They don't live in a state where they study Texas history. Many of them didn't know. They expected the cavalry to ride in. They expected there to be some turn of events. But because of the knowledge that they were lacking, they didn't realize exactly what was going on there. When we look back at the past, those who neglect the past are destined to repeat it. The past is important to us. For that reason, if none other. One last thing. The end of Deuteronomy says simply, if you ever forget the Lord your God and follow other gods and worship and bow down to them, I testify against you today that you will surely be destroyed. Like the nations the Lord destroyed before you, so you will be destroyed for not obeying the Lord your God. That gives us pause in various groups, nations, churches, but certainly as families and as individuals, that continues to be true as well. When we forget about God, then we start to follow other paths. There are other philosophies. There are other approaches that begin to make sense for us or begin to make sense for the person. It's not doing. Not listening, not remembering what God has said. What we're talking about today is just a reminder. This is something you know. This is something we wrestle with all the time. And yet it's something that's so easy for us to allow to slip our minds and to forget. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 4, Paul says to Timothy, keep reminding God's people of these things. Warn them before God, and then he makes them some specific things. But the task of what Timothy was to do was to keep reminding about what's going on. Memory is powerful. It's also a two-edged sword. Some years ago, about 20 years ago, I was working with a little girl who was really having problems with nightmares. She was about 9 years old, and she kept having these reoccurring nightmares. And we kind of approached it as on a behavioral basis, and family had made lots of changes in their bedtime routine, what they watched on television, just any number of things. And one day, our session was over, and her dad wasn't there yet. And so this was at a school. We went outside, and she had her soccer ball. We're kicking the soccer ball around. And she says, you know what I have in my room? What? I got a piece of the Murrah Building. Oh, really? Yeah, my uncle was one of the first responders, and he put a piece of the Murrah Building into his pocket. And I use it as a doorstop. And so when Dad got there, I said, just to Dad, get rid of the doorstop. And he did. And the nightmares went away. Now, the little girl didn't figure out that the stone was reminding her of something frightening. Probably there were adults that wouldn't necessarily make that link. But memory is so powerful that even on a less than obvious basis, it really has an impact in our lives. The other part of it is Satan is constantly spinning memory. He spins memory to work against us. Remember when you prayed that prayer and there wasn't an answer? Remember when you did all that dedicated stuff and things didn't work out exactly like you wanted in your life? He's constantly doing that. He's constantly taking things and obstructing our progress. God, on the other hand, says to us, wait a second, the story's not over yet. We're not to the end of this. We haven't had the conclusion. You don't know how all this is going to turn out. Because there are things that I'm doing actively right now that come to be your benefit. Psalms 103, verse 2. I will praise the Lord, the psalmist says. I won't forget anything he does for me. What a challenge. This morning, I hope you'll think. I hope you'll pray. I hope you'll spend some time literally building those opportunities, maybe even building some practical traditions that help you to remember what God has done and therefore want to do what God is giving you now and where God is leading you. We're going to offer an invitation. This is not a man-made invitation. This is God's invitation. If you'd like to respond to that, we'd be glad to assist you while we sing this song together.